Hi everybody, namaskar and a very warm welcome. You are watching the Political Economy Show with Shweta Punj. The purpose of the show is to break down the policies that are shaping India. And today we are talking about the banking sector. We've seen that this sector is very, very important for the health of the economy. And in the last 10 years, it has seen an overhaul. To understand what has happened in the Indian banking sector, how safe are Indian banks, and how good of a role is our regulator playing? Well, to understand this in greater detail, we have with us Mr. Prasanna Tanti. Mr. Prasanna Tanti is Executive Director, Center for Analytical Finance at ISB. He's also an associate professor, and he's written several papers on the cleanup that's happened in the banking sector, on the health of the banking sector, and so on. Prasanna, thank you so much for speaking to us. I know it's been a long day for you, and you've been teaching students, and I'm hoping that today we'll be able to, you know, make more sense of how Indian banking or banking overall impacts us. I just want to go back a little bit before we come to the current state of Indian banking. In 2018, we saw a large bank collapse, which was a big financer for infrastructure projects. We've seen arrests of high profile bankers. We've seen officials from public sector banks getting arrested. So that was you know, the period between, say, 2008 to about 2018, where we saw a lot of shakeup, and there was, what you witnessed was queues of people lining up outside cooperative banks, taking all their money out, and so on. I want to get a sense from you on what happened at that time and how vulnerable is the Indian banking sector today.
Sure. So thanks for having me, Shweta. It's a pleasure talking to you. And I'll never get tired talking about banking because I love this topic. So I'll take you back slightly before 2008 also. If you remember, or if people who followed 2003-04 budget in India. So infrastructure funding was like 4% of GDP in 2004. If you see the budget there, it was a budget with 4.5% fiscal deficit and 4% of GDP being spent on infrastructure. Now, what does it mean? Like, if you compare it to today's budget, it's like instead of 11 lakh crore, some 14 lakh crore being spent. Now, after that, what governments did was reduced budget support to infrastructure. It was reduced to 1.6%. Now, the question is, who will fund this infrastructure? So the governments discovered that public sector banks will do funding of infrastructure. So this public, instead of government budget funding, which is sort of equity infusion, most of these infrastructure projects were funded by debt. And I'm not imputing any motives. I'm just saying there is a policy angle why this all started. Now, the problem is when you have too much debt, you know, repayment becomes a problem, and some of them got into trouble. Now, in August 27th, 2008, remember, this was a month, almost 15 days before the Lehman crisis. So these days, people discuss that a lot of these forbearance policies were a response to the Lehman crisis. But the actual date of the RBI intervention was August 28th, 2008. Unless RBI perfectly anticipated what Fed could not anticipate or anybody else could anticipate, that how bad the crisis is going to be, RBI issued a circular which said that you can restructure loans and not call it in spirit, you know, if I have to explain your viewers. You know what happened before that? If you restructure a loan, that means there is a problem with the loan. So you have to make provisions. You have to, as a conservative accountant, you should start treating it as an NPA. Any loan that you restructure, by restructure, I mean give more time, lessen interest rates, or waive off some part of it, you had to make provisions. This was the rule up to 2008. On August 26, 2008, the circular sort of allowed banks to restructure loans without making them an NPA. So which means, if you have a problem borrower and comes to you, all that you have to do is restructure them. So it's like win-win, you know, for you, there is no NPA. The borrower is happy, you're happy, everybody
right,
is happy.
Right. So
except
So essentially, in 2008, you're saying that there was a circular that actually made it possible for banks to hide all the bad loans and when you say restructure and to completely clean up their balance sheets. So essentially, it's like pushing the dirt under the carpet.
Yes. And it's a sensible policy in during a crisis, because I'll tell you the objective. In a crisis, you don't want all borrowers being declared NPAs and then firms will shut down and it'll make things worse. It was a sensible policy during a crisis. There is, although I'm highlighting on the date because it was not a after crisis response. This is actually, in my view, there is a
Because
political
Lehman
crisis.
happened in September,
Number 16. So this
September
was August
16th, and
twenty,
this happened in
yeah,
August.
August 27th, and there were like 3 4 months discussion prior to this. It was not as if it was planned on August 20. Circular was issued on August 27th. So the RBI thought about it almost 6 months before, where there was no sign of any crisis. So what I'm trying to point out is this: root of this problem is not global financial crisis. Root of this problem was substituting infrastructure funding away from budget and forcing public sector banks to fund infrastructure and reducing budget support. As I said, from 4%, it fell to 1.6% of the budget
So then
during this.
banks were being used for political purposes. They were being so just for the government to present a budget where they could allocate maybe more money towards something that they wanted to, they palmed off the spending on infrastructure to public sector banks.
Yes. So if you see budgets of 2005, 6, 7, 8, although the government continued most of the earlier policies, this was a structural change from 4% of the GDP. So just see 2003-4 budget. I remember the number also. 119,000 crore was spent on infrastructure on a GDP of 27 lakh. Now the number, even when GDP went to 56 lakh crore in 2008, the infrastructure spending remained the same. So government was not spending for infrastructure, but economy was growing. So you need somebody to fund. And the public sector bank became these funders. But the problem is, public sector bank can only give loans. So instead of equity, you substituted it to loan. Now you are having all these firms with like heavy leverage, a lot of loans. And when you are with loan and less equity, even a small shock, you will get into trouble because you have no cushion to sort of support you. And my guess, although nobody has publicly stated this, that this circular was a response to brewing trouble of infrastructure companies, which happened before the crisis, not after crisis. That is why circular was issued on August 27 and was discussed even like 3 4 months before that. There was a public document about it. As you follow all these
What
circulars.
kind of trouble of infrastructure companies?
So these are, your road companies, your those who are in railroads, eventually ILFS. Those are the borrowers of ILFS. Many of them today, steel and all those, which later were, you remember, Dirty Dozen, those 12 companies,
Yes.
think Bhushan and all of that,
Yeah.
these people who are in trouble. These were the people who are in trouble and who had gotten into trouble, although their accounting numbers were very good. But my guess is this circular was a response to that. But nevertheless, because financial crisis happened during the crisis, it actually helped because it prevented a large scale shutdown of companies. So I don't have a quibble with doing a policy like this during a circular, during a crisis. But what happened after the economy recovered, that was very unique to India. It has never happened anywhere in the world. So economy 2011, and you track these numbers very closely, we were back to like 9% growth, 8.8, 9% growth. And a counter-cyclical policy, any kind of emergency medicine should stop once that health, you recover.
Correct.
You don't use emergency medicines after you recover. But the government now sort of realized that this is a very nice way of funding infrastructure, because you don't have to allocate money from the budget, make public sector banks lend to infrastructure, and if they get into trouble anyway, you have this weapon of, this is called forbearance, where they can restructure. So government happy because there is no need to put budget money from the budget. Public sector banks are happy because they are getting very high loan growth, profitability, and no default, because the moment there is a default, they'll restructure. Infrastructure companies are also happy because they are getting money. Some of them used it for private purpose. They did all sorts of stuff, and there is no default. Nobody's coming after them. So this is what that went on from 2011 to 2015. This is the source, banking crisis which manifested later.
So, just to break it down for our viewers, when we say banking crisis, what was happening in the Indian banks at that time? How were people like you and me and small business owners, how are we feeling, or how are we feeling the brunt or facing the brunt of it?
Immediately, it is not apparent because the on the books of banks were very clean because they were not reporting NPAs. But gradually, banks started accumulating. The loans banks had were mostly bad loans, which means that these banks had practically no capital. It was only a matter. So imagine when you allocate resources to large infrastructure companies which are struggling, and that means you are allocating less to smaller firms. You are allocating less to smaller borrowers, or and when you know that these large, even banks for sure knew that one day this forbearance policy will go, and once the forbearance policy goes, they know that the NPAs are going to go up. So that made them very cautious about lending to small borrowers, and the real impact was felt when these banks were cleaned up. In 2015, under Governor Rajan, finally the RBI declared enough is enough, and they sort of withdrew this forbearance policy. Now they said, look, to restructure, you have to, and RBI did an inspection called asset quality review. And they said, your NPAs are non-performing assets, which are bad loans, are not 2% or 3%. They're actually 11. By 2017, we realized 11% of bank, in public sector banks, it was like 16 or 17% of their loans are bad loans. Now their capital adequacy was like 9, 10%, which means almost 6 to 7% of depositor money was lost practically. Because these were government-owned banks, we did not have a collapse. Otherwise, imagine if this was a private sector, we would have had a crazy run on the banking system and a lot of depositors would have lost money. Now, the way it impacted you and me was after this, banks stopped lending. Banks completely stopped lending, and bank lending, bank credit to small firms went into negative territory, the growth. Employment suffered, and banks stopped lending to non-banks. And that, these same borrowers were borrowing from non-banks also. So when they lost support from banking, they started defaulting to non-banks also. This is one reason. The first non-bank to collapse was IL&FS. Why? Because IL&FS had lent to these infrastructure firms. And now infrastructure firms' oxygen was this bank money. That oxygen, when it was cut off in 2015, so they started defaulting on IL&FS. So NBFC started collapsing. IL&FS spread to Dewan Housing. Dewan Housing spread to Reliance Capital. It spread to all of them. So those who, the credit flow from these almost stopped. For about 2 years, we had negative credit growth. And some people, those who had deposited in cooperative banks and those who had invested in NBFC, they lost money as well. Public sector
So
banks were
when you
failing.
say they lost money, what happened to that money? That money was used by the bank for lending to businesses that were not viable?
Yeah, that had already been used. Only thing is these guys didn't know, so that money was never there. It was just accounting. So when this asset quality review exposed that these banks and NBFCs didn't have capital, they the strong ones like such as public sector banks, eventually the government put in money. 2018, if you remember, government put in, recapitalized banks by 3 lakh crores. So that is, these banks were saved, and private banks eventually raised money. But other than that, other banks like NBFCs and let's say Yes Bank, let's take the case of Yes Bank. Your question is, how did people lose money? A lot of people had subscribed to bonds issued by Yes Bank. These were called AT1 bonds. These were mutual funds that invested into these bonds. Now, when Yes Bank went down, the value of these AT1 bonds, which were invested by mutual funds, were written down to zero. That means mutual funds lost money. And which means those who had invested in mutual funds, their NAV fell by that extent. So this is like people like you and me, or much ordinary investors who had put in this mutual, they lost money. And equity shareholders of all these banks lost money because bank share price fell by 50, 60, 70%. Deposits of large banks were spared because of the government and deposit insurance. And then the other losses, small business people did not get credit growth, and therefore employment suffered. So you will not, by 2019, pre-COVID, our GDP growth fell to like less than 4%. You know, COVID has washed a lot of things. You know, now that COVID came in, we've a lot of people have forgotten that. But our great growth rate fell to 4%.
So the
And one.
implication of that, the implication of what happened before 2000 and between 2008 and 2015 was felt, you're saying, before COVID, after in the 2015 to 2020 period.
Yes, 2015 to 2018 particularly. And 2018, it would have, you know, banks started recovering, but suddenly this ILFS collapsed, you know, August 2018. And that had its own second round effect for other NBFCs. And that made even it dragged the whole thing by a year. So it all went up to COVID, you know, 2019, 2019 March to be precise. And meanwhile, government was taking corrective measures. You know, we can talk about these also.
So that's what I want to
And
know now. So we have the asset quality review, which forced the banks to recognize that these are bad loans, and they provisioned for them and cleaned up their balance sheets, which meant that capital opened up and lending started happening again to retail investors, to regular people, to businesses, and so on. Now, if we were to look at 2023-24, and currently, as we speak, you know, there is a payment bank called Paytm, which is facing a lot of flak. And that again raises concerns over the health of our banking system as a whole. Of course, payment banks are much smaller than regular banks. They don't do any lending. Having said that, there is, you know, evidently there is the Paytm is so seeped into our whole ecosystem. So there are lots of questions now. So I want to get a sense from you on what is how is the Indian banking system looking today? It has expanded tremendously, that's true. And you know, but again, to go back to the question that we started with, how safe is the Indian banking system right now?
sure. So I put all my deposits are in Indian Bank. So whatever little I have, at least I trust them. Now, if you allow me, I just want to add something that happened between 2015 to 2018. Now, once this, you know, I'll before answering your question, you know, once this AQR was done, unfortunately, immediately banks were not recapitalized. It took some time. You know, even I think RBI did not anticipate that the scale of the problem may be this large. They must have thought that from 4% it will be 6%, but practically it went from 4% to 17%. This, like, it required capital of 5 lakh crore. You know, government budget was not, you know, 5 lakh crore even today is a very large number. And
Absolutely.
you know, 7 years back, the budget was like 15, you know, today budget is 47 lakh crore, that time 18, 20 lakh crore. In a budget of 18, 20 lakh crore, where do you get 5 lakh crore from? This was a big problem. So now government therefore took some time to recapitalize. Private banks also took some time to raise this money. So we had this intervening around 2, 2.5 years where banks were in bad shape and they were not recapitalized, and that is where lending suffered. And then the big change that happened is IBC, you know, the bankruptcy code, because ultimately somebody had to discipline these borrowers. What the big bankruptcy code did was, now if you default, and if a bank takes you to a court, which is NCLT in bankruptcy, the first thing that will happen is current promoter is kicked out. You know, I'm deliberately using the word kicked out because it's actually kicked out. You know, the promoter loses the business. So this old game of defaulting on a bank and keeping blackmailing them, that, you know, then asking them for a concession and all of that stopped. Because now if you default, bank can threaten you to take to a court, a bankruptcy court, which is NCLT, and then you lose your company as a promoter. I think there is significant research that we have done, and there are people at RBI who have done in CAFRAL. There's a researcher, his name is Gautam Udupa. They show that IBC had a very big disciplining impact on these borrowers. That's another thing. So there were corrective actions taken to improve bank health, at the same time, borrower behavior. So both of them happened slowly, though. I would have wished them, you know, I would have wished that this happened quickly, but it took like 3, 4 years. But then after that, things started improving. And now coming to your question of how is the situation today, it is dramatically different. So of course there are individual cases, right? Individual cases have always been there. You know, in 2002 there was something called Global Trust Bank that collapsed. A lot of NBFCs. One of these things will keep happening in a dynamic economy, and in a market economy, somebody will lose, somebody will gain. That's not an issue. But At a systemic level, if you see NPS today, it's low. You know, end of the last year, it was like 3.6 or 3.7%. And now, if you see the recent quarterly result, almost all the banks are less than, except some of these S-Bank and all of those which have legacy loans. If you take any private bank and even public sector banks, after provisioning, you see the SBI numbers, it's less than 1%.
So
And
how
there is
did
no
that
reason.
happen? So there's IBC you spoke about. We spoke about asset quality review. What are the other measures that have been taken, policy moves that have been taken to improve the health of Indian banking?
Yeah. So the third thing that I said, in 2018, they infused capital. They infused capital into
Recapitalization of
banks.
banks.
Recapitalization of banks. Private banks raised money. There were mergers of banks. Some of the weak banks were merged with stronger banks. In between, there was a very strong policy by Urjit Patel called PCA, Prompt Corrective Action. This was another strict medicine that was given to banks. So RBI said, unless you improve your health, some 13 banks were put under PCA.
Yeah.
And these banks had to improve on four dimensions, you know, capital, operating profit, NPA, and so on. And they had put under serious restriction of, you know, they could not lend, they could not expand, they couldn't do anything, these 13 of them. So this also sort of forced government to, you know, expedite improving their health. So these were some of the tough measures that were taken during this time, both by the government and the RBI, really helped. Although I personally feel in some cases RBI went overboard, as in that, you know, if you have time, we can talk about the February 12 circular. But on an average, you know, these kind of difficult treatment, you know, once you have you know, this kind of malaise, you have to treat, you have to be open for, you know, difficult treatments, painful treatments. This was necessary. So this, all these steps improved lending practices, and also this was in balance sheet problem. You know, banks were also in bad shape, firms were also in bad shape.
Bad
so
shape,
IBC
yeah.
and those kind of measures helped improve quality firms, and these RBI and government improved health of banks, and that's the fruits of that we are seeing now. And RBI learned these lessons. You know, the COVID time also, again, there was a crisis. Again, they announced forbearance. But this time, what was different was, moment the crisis was over, they have withdrawn almost all of those emergency measures. You'd have none of those emergency measures in place now. So actually, RBI and the government have learned their lessons, although it was a different government and all of that. But then they have learned their lessons, and this time they've used emergency measures judiciously. So that also sort of helped. So on an average now, I think banks are in very good shape. And by, even this Paytm case that you spoke about, it is not a case of bad lending. It's. I'm not private. I'm sure you know more than what I know about what's actually going on. I can only read what you people put out in the public domain. That's all I know. But still, even if, let's say, it's doing, it's not very clean, but it's still not a systemic issue. It's too small a issue to cause systemic issues like 2008 and 2008 to 15.
Okay, we'll come to that later. So you're going back to the state of current health of Indian banking. Bad loans have declined to multi-year lows right now. We don't.
Yes. Yes. So end of last year, it was 3.5% NPA from 11.5-12% on an average. And now last quarter, I have not calculated for all banks, but SBI is 25% of the banking system. So SBI after provisioning is less than 1%. Even before provisioning, some around 2%. So private banks are all like 0.5%. So there are some legacy issues with like Punjab National Bank, you're aware. Yes Bank, you're aware. These banks have elevated NPA levels. On an average, at a system level, it's very, very small. And more importantly, it's not just the numbers. These are true numbers because there is no restructuring going on. See, even in 2011, if we had done this podcast, let's say in 2011, and if you had asked me what's the NPA level, I would have said 3%. But what I'm missing in 2011, what was there additional, there was a 5% restructured book. You know, practically it was 8%. It was not 3%. 8% presented as 3% in 2011. But today,
there's greater
is actually,
transparency. Greater transparency
of
the
no
numbers.
There is no additional hidden number anywhere. So 2 or 2.5% is actually 2 or 2.5%. So you need not, the depositor need not worry about some hidden thing which will come up again after 3 years, and suddenly they'll realize their money is gone, their investment in mutual fund is gone. That is unlikely to happen unless there is a
So
big
what does
shock.
that mean for me as a business owner, as a depositor? Should I be putting my money in the bank? Is lending now, is borrowing from the bank easier for me?
Yeah, so borrowing from banks, you know, there are other procedural issues, but it's your probability of getting credit from banks should increase, and that is what we are seeing. You know, credit growth now is around 15%, and it's not just personal. Even small business credit growth has increased, so your ability to access capital should from banks should increase. For a depositor, there is no need to you know, depositors are always safe, especially public sector banks. Eventually government will bail out, but you can now consider, you can be a bit more adventurous, start investing in mutual funds which invest in some kind of securities issued by banks which have higher yields, because these banks are sound. Chances of default on, I told you that Yes Bank case, that 81 bond, 81 is a type
yeah.
of bond issued by a bank which gives a higher return, but then there are higher risk, it will be written off if there is a problem. So this chance of a shock, you lose, you know, you chasing higher yield and suddenly realizing that your capital is gone, those chances are very low. So you can be, you know, a little bit more adventurous and look for equity, look for these high yield bonds and not just passively put in fixed deposits. And for small businesses, their ability to access credit should improve. You know, it should be far easier, and they can plan their investments better. You know, they should get credit for a longer period of time. And if they have investment plans which are profitable, they should go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, towards the end of the conversation, I just want to bring in the regulator as well. Because you mentioned that the regulator in 2008 was too lax, allowing banks to completely, you know, restructure their loans and camouflage the NPAs and so on. In between, we saw the regulator really go into the fifth gear when it comes to stringent regulations, which really helped. So currently, I want to understand the role of regulator and, you know, what is the sense that you're getting? Because we do see that lending seems to have plateaued a bit. We are seeing that while the banking sector has been in the pink of health, but the current set of numbers aren't as good as they were earlier.
This is last 2 months' problem from November. And this is precisely the regulatory issue that I was highlighting. So what happens to Indian regulators, you know, and I don't know whether it's only in India, we go from one extreme to another extreme. So as 2008 was one extreme, now the peak of other extreme was 2018 February 12th circular. You know, in 2018, regulator issued a circular that even if there is a one-day default, you have to constitute a committee of creditors, and within 6 months you have to, you know, put in a restructuring package and with the agreement of all creditors. And if you fail, take the form to bankruptcy. You know, just imagine if they, for a one-day default and within 6 months getting all other lenders on board, getting consensus, and if you don't get consensus, the firm goes to bankruptcy. This was February 12th circular. This is one instance where regulator went, you know, we show that this is one reason for ILFS collapse, because when borrowers are taken to bankruptcy, the other lenders of, you know, banks took borrowers to bankruptcy, the lender, the borrower defaulted on NBFCs and ILFS collapsed. This is one extreme. Today, unfortunately, I'm a fan of the way RBI has dealt with things for the last 3 years up to November. I'm saying it for a reason. You know, up to now, I'm a fan of what they did. But November onwards, what I'm seeing is, I'm seeing some, if I can use the word, some, I'm smelling the directional movement to other extreme. So two instances I can give you. One is that RBI observed that there is a lot of personal loans going on, you know, unsecured loans. And of course, I agree totally. That too much of unsecured loan, 30% growth, 35% growth of unsecured loan is may not be healthy. So you need to do something, I understand. So what they did was they asked NBFCs and banks to have more capital. You know, they increased, in technically they increased risk weight of these consumer loans, which means that if I have to lend 1 rupee to you, earlier if I had to have some X capital, now I have to have X plus whatever capital, and capital is expensive, which is fine. But they also did one more thing. Along with the same circular, they said Now, if a bank has to lend to an NBFC, now any loan of NBFC, whether it's a good NBFC, bad NBFC, whether NBFC is lending to consumers, NBFC is lending to productive, does not matter. Bank now will have to keep higher capital. Now, this is too much, this is this overboard. Now, think about it. Most of the lending to the poor is done by NBFCs, small businesses. Public sector banks, large banks have no ability to lend to a truck owner. They don't have any ability to lend to because these require different set of skills. These require different levels of way of operation. These people are not able to do. Currently, the way it is working is public sector bank lend to NBFCs. NBFCs go and lend to this truck or a car or small businesses and all that. Now, what this circular has done is it has made it expensive for banks to lend to NBFCs, which will have a ripple effect on these productive people. On the one hand, you want employment generation and all that. And the problem is not with this truck guy who is actually buying and investing in a productive asset. Problem was consumer loan. Whereas the first part of the regulation was good, somebody nicely inserted this clause that if a bank lends to an NBFC, now they have to keep more capital. And no questions asked. Why are you lending? Whether it is consumer, productive, no questions asked. So this beats common sense. They should have at least said that if an NBFC makes consumer loans out of this loan, then you keep higher capital, or a personal loan, you kept higher capital. So this is one of the reasons why you're also not being very enthusiastic about what's happening in banking for last 2 months, because it is hurting NBFCs. The other thing that if you have time only, I will go about it. It's a bit convoluted and complicated. The point is that RBI is worried that banks are using some third entity, some third party, to channel money to their own borrowers, their own bad borrowers. This is the RBI's worry. RBI is use the bank are using, so there is a borrower who is going to default. Now, if I don't do anything, this person will default. Now, restructuring window is closed because forbearance no longer exists. Now, how do I make sure that this person repays? I will funnel my money to a third party, and that third party will give it to this bad borrower, and that bad borrower will repay my loan. So this is what banks are doing, is the suspicion of RBI, and it is not an unfounded suspicion. As I said, spirit of RBI regulation, I totally appreciate. In fact, we have a paper where we detect exactly this. But then what they have done is something too strict. What they're doing is there is this category of hedge funds in India. They are called AIFs. They are hedge funds, basically hedge funds. They make all kinds of risky investments. They can structure investments whichever they want. Now they're saying that if, let's say, SBI invests in hedge fund, then that fund cannot invest in any of SBI borrowers. Now everybody in India is an SBI borrower. So which means so a hedge fund has to access capital from SBI. They cannot invest in any of SBI borrowers. Whether it is good, bad, there is no distinction at all. That's one. To make it worse, imagine someone who had already invested a hedge fund which has borrowed from SBI and has already invested in some SBI borrower. RBI is saying you have 30 days time. Within 30 days time, come clean. What is come clean? Either that hedge fund withdraw from that borrower, or SBI will withdraw funding from this hedge fund, or SBI will call this an NPA. Now this will dry up funding for AFs. We need more risk capital. On the one hand, we want to promote entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship will not happen with debt. Entrepreneurship, you need risk capital, equity, and hedge funds are a very good source of risk capital. Now this they are killing by doing this. So this is like to solve headache. They are like cutting off head. There is, first of all, there is no evidence that hedge funds are being used for this in a massive scale. At least I have not seen any. Let's take that there is evidence, but that does not mean that ban the whole thing. Put some filter. All that I'm saying is RBI should not do this blanket stuff. If a hedge fund is investing in a low quality borrower of the bank, then don't allow them. And do this prospective. Don't do this thing of 30 days you take back money. I can't take back money in 30 days. So give a year, 2 years, give some time. So I'm not saying, as I said, I'm a fan of everything RBI did up to November of this year. These two regulations are making.
So,
Hopefully that
from
this
too
is
little
going
regulation, we might be heading towards very, very extreme regulation.
I'm
But
worried. I'm worried. Yeah,
okay,
sorry.
but we started on an optimistic note, and we do hope that we will see some changes coming in. And I'm glad that you flagged this. Thank you very much, Prasanna Tantri, for making putting perspective into the into India's banking story, especially for the last decade. Heartening to know that the India's banking system is safe right now, and we hope that it remains so. Thank you very much. Of course, we'll be back next week with another topic that concerns you and I. Thanks so much for watching.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.